This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's a Joy Law podcast from Jack and Dean on Joy.
With Jack and Dean for the Tuesday drive home on Joy 94.9.
Joy Law.
Jack and Dean.
Joy Law.
That's right. It is time for Joy Law. This is the regular segment where we chat about legal issues of interest or concern to the LGBTIQ plus
community.
I did it all. And its allies. And joining us today to talk about a very interesting topic, the topic of surrogacy, is Bronwyn from KHQ Lawyers. Hey, Bronwyn, how you doing?
Hello, thanks for having me.
Surrogacy and surrogacy laws, and there's some recent reforms. Tell us more.
Yeah. So today I just wanted to touch base with everyone about two or three recent changes or some proposed changes that are going to be coming in around the surrogacy area. Surrogacy is something we do a lot of at KHQ, and it's something I personally really enjoy.
So you don't do surrogacy, you provide advice on surrogacy.
I haven't yet been called to be a surrogate, no.
Me either.
But I know a lot about it.
So a bit about it, yes.
I'd be well informed if I made that choice. So we've done a couple episodes, I think, on surrogacy before. So listeners might remember surrogacy laws are different state by state. So,
yes.
You know, these changes that I'm talking about are relevant to Victoria. In Victoria, it's quite closely regulated and there's a lot of hoops to jump through. And one of those significant hoops is anyone wanting to have assisted reproductive treatment, and that, you know, includes surrogacy arrangements, need to get criminal record checks and child protection order checks. So you get those from police and the Department of Health and Human Services. You know, depending on the outcome of those checks, you may or may not be able to access, you know, those services, the assisted reproductive treatment services.
What's the rationale for that law?
So I suppose it would have been a concern for the well-being of the children that would be born as a result of these procedures. So, for instance, it's not a rule that would apply if you were just going to a reproductive treatment facility to, say, store your eggs or do something like that. But if you're undergoing a treatment where, you know, a child would result and that's the aim, then I suppose it would be out of a concern for that child's welfare once they're born. I believe that would have been the underpinning policy.
Maybe I'm just being a bit lefty here, but I think, you know, if someone's got done for shoplifting years ago
and they've done their time
and they've reformed.
Yeah, that's right. But so in this circumstance, what they're more looking for are sexual and violent offences where charges have been driven.
Sweep that under the rug.
No.
Yeah. So, but even having said that, so that's, I guess, sort of the rationale behind it. But for a lot of people who go through the surrogacy process, they identify the criminal record check as being one of the most sort of stressful parts of the process. They don't quite understand why they have to get the checks. They feel humiliated. They feel stressed about it. They have to pay for it. They have to wait for it. It can take several weeks. So basically last week, the Victorian government basically announced that they would be pushing for an amendment to the Assisted Reproductive Treatment Act tomorrow, which would basically remove the requirement for police checks and child protection order checks. And of course, that doesn't mean that there are no safeguards in place. Of course, clinics who do these sorts of treatments are still going to be on the lookout for any, I suppose, potential welfare concerns. If there are any red flags that suggest a child is not going to be cared for or cannot be cared for, is going to be abused or neglected, that's certainly something that, you know, they would look at and may cause them to not provide that treatment to somebody. Mm. And of course, there's mandatory reporting for, you know, child abuse, family violence, those sorts of things once the child is here as well. But yeah, that's going to be a big change, and we could see that coming through very quickly pending any opposition.
So that's going through Parliament tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, so that's one to watch out for in the near future. But there have also been a few sort of mid to late last year which came through, which I thought it might be good to touch on as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So last June, there was also an amendment which came through which basically corrected a bit of a loophole in the Assisted Reproductive Treatment Act, which there are several presumptions as to parentage under that act that, you know, apply to men and women, or, you know, women and women, men and men, whatever it is. And there was a presumption that arose where if you were a woman and you had, if you were married, so married to a man or a woman, that your partner would need to consent for you to undergo an assisted reproductive treatment, and that your partner would actually be, your spouse would actually be the parent of the child that was born. So that makes sense. For a lot of scenarios, of course, that's what you would want. But
yes,
there's a subset of people where you're married, but you have since separated and you haven't yet divorced. So you are technically married, but you are not with that person anymore. You're not making those decisions with that person, and you shouldn't really be held back, you know,
that's
just because
right.
your estranged husband or wife says, no, I don't want you having a child using someone's, you know, donated sperm. It seems it's really at odds.
Yeah.
So
no one's holding me back.
That's right. So that's what they came and said in June. The Victorian government said that wasn't really the intention and that's not how we wanted to operate. So we're going to make a reform to recognise that, you know, people who are separated but not yet divorced do not need the consent of their former spouses.
And I wonder with that one, I understand, why would the estranged partner have say over how you want to your body and
yeah.
child, but equally, I guess it also protects against future claims to say that partner has some liability or
that's right. Just because, yeah, if you for whatever reason have elected not to get divorced, which plenty of people do, that you're then, yeah, I guess, you know, technically, I get, you know, under the legislation, you would have to consent, and I guess that's really the main issue. But you know, let's say you consented at some stage, and you know, the situation changed, and it just leads to a whole lot of unintended consequences. So I think that was a good one that changed. And then also in December last year, some reforms took place that broadened the categories of costs that surrogates can be reimbursed for.
Now, of course, with surrogacy, it is altruistic.
That's
it's
right.
No commercial relationships and altruistic.
No, so it's still a situation where the surrogate can't materially benefit in any way.
Yes.
But they have allowed for more circumstances or, you know, they have expanded it, but they've also just clarified some of the categories that, you know, that the surrogate can be reimbursed for. So previously it was really sparse. It was basically medical expenses relating to IVF treatment, pregnancy, birth, travel costs and legal expenses. Those are really the only criteria, and there wasn't a lot fleshed around that as to, you know, what was in and what was out. And we would always have clients coming to us and asking, well, you know, as a result of me being a surrogate and me now being pregnant, you know, I now have these additional needs. I can't care for my existing children as well. I need some help.
Yes.
Or because of this particular pregnancy, I now have this kind of medical condition, which I didn't have before, and I'm going to need help with. So,
tricky.
Yeah, it was a bit tricky, but now it's good because they've expanded those categories. So they've fleshed out some examples for, you know, more costs that you can be reimbursed for. So, yeah, they've basically sketched out medical costs prior to conception, during the pregnancy and birth, or, you know, in relation to the child's birth, any counselling expenses, and as we know, counselling is a necessary part of surrogacy.
Yes.
And anything, really.
Just in life in general.
Says I.
Out-of-pocket expenses that the surrogate mother may incur, things like travel, accommodation and childcare costs, which is what I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
And also, interestingly, for periods that the mother may need to take off work as a result of the pregnancy. So that can be sort of 2 months, I suppose, prior to when you're expecting the child to come. But it could also be at any other period where, you know, for medical reasons, that woman can't work anymore.
Yes.
And then finally, if there is new insurance coverage or increased insurance coverage to sort of meet the needs of that pregnancy, any sort of gap, I suppose, can also be reimbursed. So it's always a good idea to keep track of all of those things, maybe have a ledger or a spreadsheet.
I was thinking with the reimbursement. Now, back in the 80s, my mother used to work in retail.
Yes.
And she worked for a fashion outlet, which was devoted entirely to maternity wear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
can I get reimbursement? I don't know if they still have shops that are just maternity.
Oh, yeah.
These sort of smock-looking things with a big bow and a big sort of...
I badly want to say a brand, but I'm not allowed to.
Can you get covered for the cost of a new wardrobe?
Yeah, I think that would... Yeah, I think if you... I guess the rule is within reason. So maybe not an entirely new wardrobe. But yeah, if you're someone who, you know, you need some new clothes, some new work appropriate clothes, let's say, and, you know, your body is now very different, then, yeah, I would say that's acceptable. But everything
more
sort
suits.
Of needs to be within reason.
Within reason.
Yeah, and you know, do just keep track of, all of those receipts and invoices and those.
But I think also
things.
Going into the relationship, probably you sort of have the conversation.
That's right,
Before you start... being pregnant, yeah?
That's
it, yeah.
Be clear
about what you're up for and what you earned.
Yeah, and that's really the key with surrogacy all the time anyway, you know, and that's why the counselling is so important. It's to make sure that everyone's on the same page, the expectations are matched, no one gets, you know, shocked or disappointed, or you don't have, you know, a situation that no one foresaw.
And I suspect if I was to ask you, should you get it in writing?
Yes.
Yes.
You would probably say, probably.
Well, you know, as all lawyers would say, yes, everything is better in writing. Look, you don't, as we've discussed before, you don't have to have a surrogacy agreement. Surrogacy agreements are not always binding. Well, they're not binding and enforceable except insofar as they relate to medical costs. But that applies regardless whether you have an agreement. But yes, of course, if you would like some extra certainty, then always best to get it in writing. If you have any questions about surrogacy, you can get in touch with us at KHQ Lawyers.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Bronwyn. We look forward to speaking with you or anyone else from the team from KHQ Lawyers in a fortnight's time.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.